Mike Chang is a Taiwanese-American artist and art educator based in Singapore. Working across a variety of mediums such as drawing, painting, sculpture, and collage, his works seek to explore a curiosity towards conventions of seeing. Encountering his works is a way of understanding his sense of nuanced humor. Today, Mike and I will take a deep dive into his art, discussing the formal qualities of his works, his process, and his journey of developing a visual language. Hello everybody, this is Yijing. I'm here with Mike Chang, a Taiwanese-American artist and art educator based in Singapore, who was also my ex-teacher. Hi Mike.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, just finished teaching. I need to get teenagers out of my brain.
Thank God I'm not a teenager anymore. Mm-hmm. It goes way back, right? I think it's been 10 years.
It's been a long time.
It's insane. We're just talking about how I need to get used to not calling you like Mr. Chang.
Yeah, I have some students that immediately when they graduate, they just call me Mike right away.
But yeah, does that kind of make you feel a bit weird too?
No, it's okay. I don't mind.
Yeah? What's the that conventional period? What's acceptable?
I mean, I don't really have a good idea what is acceptable, but I think maybe after J2 when they finish like...
Oh, like when they're an adult.
And yeah, that after 18, I guess it's okay to call me Mike.
Because they're an adult and you're also an adult. And
yeah.
Same level.
And also when they're in Hua Chong, it's pretty just across the street. So they're still students.
That's true.
Yeah, but I don't really care. Yeah. I'm not very formal.
Yeah. So, definitely remember that about you.
I think in America, we just call all the professors by first name basis.
Exactly. Yeah. That definitely is a difference. And it's kind of weird. But, you know, that's why in Singapore, when we are used to calling Mr. Something, Mr. Something, we're kind of still used to that hierarchy, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I think as long as the students are respectful, I think they can call me any name.
It's fine. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how you got here to being a teacher.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. How you got here to Singapore even? Because you're not born in Singapore.
No, right? I'm from Taiwan and I live in the States throughout most of my formal education. And after I finished studying my master's degree from CalArts, I had this idea that I kind of want to live outside the States for a couple of years. So I was looking at Europe, I was looking at Asia. And then eventually I have this idea that I would live in a place which I don't know anything about. So I kind of was looking at Southeast Asia. And one thing lead to another, I found a job through MOE and they were hiring expats to come to Singapore to teach for a couple of years. And I thought just a good opportunity to experience living in a different place. So I came and I never left. I quite enjoy living in Asia in general. And I enjoy Southeast Asia as well. It's very diverse and I like the weather. It's hot all the time.
You like tropical weather?
I like tropical weather. I hate sweating, but I like, I don't like cold. Now I don't think I can go back to live in a cold area because it's just so painful. And especially for artists, like holding a brush in the winter, like trying to paint is like too much.
Oh
so
my God.
I'm just so used to like having warm weather and be able to like sit outside every night. It's nice.
That's interesting. I never thought about that. Does it affect the texture or the quality of like the paint or your materials a little bit?
I think to some degree, I'm sure. For different people, I think it does. For me, not so much, but I can imagine. You know, I have a friend, Jasmine, she lives in Colorado and it's very cold in the winter and she does oil painting. I think it probably affects how she paints.
Yeah, it seems like it might crack a bit easier or like it dries up faster.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, basically, when you don't want to turn on the heater, it's basically below zero in the winter. So things do freeze, including artwork.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I like it here. It's nice and warm all the time. Yeah, it's a nice small art scene. It's pretty international. I'm closer to Taiwan. I can go back and visit my relatives on school holidays. So yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. And how old were you when you left Taiwan?
Oh, I was quite young. I was in sec one, so I was 12.
Okay, so you spent like a certain amount of time there as well.
I finished my primary school in Taiwan. So in theory, I can speak a little bit of Chinese.
In theory.
In theory. I don't do it so much now. I do use once in a while to scold students if I need to.
Whoa, why is that?
No, I'm kidding. I don't think I ever really scold students.
I can't imagine you doing that.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest weaknesses.
Oh, too kind.
Yeah, I just give them a look. But yeah, my Chinese, I would like to use more, but I just, you know, in Singapore, everything's kind of done in English, especially...
It's English.
Especially the art scene, it's mostly English-driven. It would be nice to have more diverse, actually. The diversity in terms of like how we talk about art, because I definitely feel like my vocabulary in Chinese is very weak. Took me a long time to like translate an idea to a sentence. Yeah. For example, like talking about very formal things like compositions or like
definitely
color and rhythm, you know, how do you, you need a different set of words, you know, in Chinese to kind of figure that, to articulate those ideas. Yeah.
When did you have to do that? Was it when you exhibited in Taiwan or?
Like here, sometimes, you know, there are Chinese speaking people here as well.
Right.
So sometimes I have to, talk to them about my ideas. I have a lot of time, hard time putting my, my words, translating my words. And yeah, when I go to Taiwan, when I talk to artists there, or talking to people in the art scene there using Chinese, it would be much easier. But unfortunately, I don't use it very much.
Definitely. Yeah. So the last time you went back was last year?
To Taiwan?
Yeah.
I was there in New Year's, right before COVID starts.
Oh my.
That was at the very beginning.
So you were there for New Year's and the Taipei
and then
fireworks
everyone,
and everything.
And then everybody started wearing masks right away.
Oh my goodness.
I think on the plane back, I think 100% of people wearing masks.
Wow.
And that was very early on. That was February. It's not even February, end of Jan.
Definitely. I find that my friends in Taiwan take the situation very seriously, like from early on.
People wear masks just in general in winters because they don't want to catch the flu. So people take masks very seriously. I was actually trying to buy some masks for my grandparents, but actually I couldn't find any.
Wow.
All the store already sold out. It was just the beginning of this whole thing.
Yep, that we are all caught in right now.
It seems like a lifetime ago, but we're still here. Things are still changing.
And it's like this year just began, and it's, wow, it feels like a lifetime already.
It's bad. Can we start over, please? It's really bad.
I know, right? The thing was that I remember going into 2020, like everyone was being so hopeful, you know, new decade. There's still hope, okay? You know, this year is still just the first quarter.
Yes.
Yeah. So I actually wanted to talk about one of your recent work, Stories of Dying Ember, which was complete, it's not complete, it's still ongoing.
Yeah, it's something that I started last year in June, a little bit after June, and then I recently sort of scanned and put everything online. So I kind of do this sort of sketches to kind of just documenting my own thoughts in a more organized way. Otherwise, everything just kind of in my sketchbook and it's messy, and sometimes I kind of forget what I was thinking about. So this kind of helped me to see everything in a more linear way. Yeah.
Do you mean that you do these sketches and then you kind of put them into a collective, or you start off with an idea of doing something and you just do more and more of it?
Usually I don't have an idea when I start. So I think it was maybe around end of last year, I realized there's a certain motif, certain threads of things that I was seeing through all my sketches. And then I had this idea of sort of putting them together under some kind of framework. So because my aunt passed away of cancer last June, so a lot of the drawing, I think, in some ways was sort of responding to that. So in the editing process, obviously there are a lot of other drawings that didn't sort of make it to the final edit. So basically, I guess the framework helped me sort out the more essential ones that I think are important to that. So I guess I kind of work backwards a little bit. So I kind of just do a lot of drawings and paintings, and I kind of go through them and find something that have relationship to each other. and then sort of put it together.
Mm, definitely. I understand this idea of going backwards. It's hard to talk about. It's hard to have like a definite thing. Mm. And then usually through the process of making it changes.
It also changes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. And this one in particular, it stood out to me. It's obviously very in keeping with your style of sketches and doing collages. But yeah, I just wonder how did you start with this? So in the description, you talked about when you were at the funeral, there were a lot of Buddhist prayers and chantings. Mm-hmm. And then you're starting to feel dizzy. And then, you know, it seemed almost like you went on this trip.
Yes. So there's definitely like a sense of, I guess, journey. Mm. And it's long. It's like I sat there for 8 hours.
Wow, it's part of the procedure.
It's a part of the procedure. So families are supposed to be there, reading with the monks.
Okay.
I don't understand a single word.
Do you remember?
I don't. No, of course not. But you sing how those things, how the what do you call it? Is it mantra or?
Yeah, there's a certain rhythm to it, right?
There's no punctuation. It just
It's
just words after words.
Do you know if they actually mean something or?
I'm pretty sure they have meaning.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. But because my understanding of Chinese is basic, it's basic. Okay. But you know, each character I can more or less understand. So when you have thousands and thousands of those characters that you're running through with your eyes, and when you have no, when you don't really understand the significance of how they are putting together, you kind of use your own sort of projection of, oh, these two words become this meaning, and you have a sentence of this, then it becomes. So a lot of time, my brain was just sort of doing guesswork and sort of projecting my own sort of understanding of, you know, what the underlying sort of tone and meaning of whatever they are reading. And so yeah, so in some ways it stir up imaginations. So I guess, and I was zoning out.
No, I totally get you. Yeah. Because when I go to I feel guilty, but let's say when I go to church service, and you know, just when someone is talking or something is happening, and you are either just passively participating, or you are repeating something, and your mind just wanders.
Right. So my mind was definitely wandering. I don't know. Maybe I'm like that just all the time. But but you know, those words, because I don't have a daily relationship with a text like that, so it becomes something that stands out for me. And you know. So I guess in some ways I was sort of draw inspiration from some of the characters in the book, and how they are put together into a sentence. So some I would say some of it is quite poetic.
Yeah, and you actually use words in your sketches.
Yeah, I actually cut out some of the words. So I took pictures of the book. Some of the phrases was quite. Yeah, quite poetic. So I thought I would keep it. So I put it in my sketchbook. Obviously, at that time, I wasn't thinking about like making something out of it. It's just part of my routine of collecting images and phrases and words that I see my daily routine. And you know, sometimes I keep them for a while before I know what to do with it. But the idea is just to start a collection.
Yeah,
start a bank of all this. Possible motifs
for me
to use later on.
So how did you, like, what were some of the motifs or the things that visually tied this together? How did you decide that, you know, this few sketches or, you know, this collages, how do they become this work of stories? Stories by the
December? Because the runtime is so long, it's like 6 to 8 months long doing these sketches. I think I probably forget a lot of
the details
in between, but I eventually thought about, I was thinking about a landscape, I think, because I think the text refers to, I don't want to say paradise, but refers to a place for the dead that I think this text is supposed to guide them to. So it's a place. So I guess when I close my eyes and think about all those things, the plays start to have characters. And I think one of my interests, you know, even before this project, is the idea of light, and sight, how we see, what we see, and what kind of distortion there is.
Yes, we'll definitely get into that.
Right. So I was thinking about sight, and I was thinking about this imaginary landscape. So I had this idea of about like thinking about heat. I don't know where that comes from, but the idea of thermal heat. Because light has two qualities, right? One is image; it creates the image, it reflects light. The other is heat.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I was thinking about like if you.
How do you
if we can see light without skin, basically it's sensing heat. Mm-hmm. So how do we? So I was thinking sort of in a way thinking about how do we see without our eyes, and skin and touch and this sort of thermal sensory becomes something we can see without our eyes. So I guess the landscape becomes a little bit of sort of a combination of imagination as well as my reaction to heat.
Okay, yeah. that makes sense a little bit more because you know you're talking about motifs, and I noticed that you have you know sketches like a mixture of more recognizable figures, but a lot of times also just almost geometric shapes that kind of envelope each other, and then you talk about the heat, and I'm thinking like all these different layers of heat.
So I guess in my mind, I was thinking about, heat will melt everything, and you know, when it's too hot, then everything became to kind of change forms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a physical reaction, right? When you have material changing states, like water, you know, change states in temperature, different temperature. So I was just kind of thinking about all those things, both sort of physical reality as well as sort of mental reality.
Interesting thought about heat changing the shape and the form of things.
Mm.
Does this tie back to, you know, the distortion? And you know, can you talk a bit more about how you explore this idea of sight, and you talk about like the conventions of seeing?
I think this is something I thought about for a long time, because I think just because as an artist, or maybe not just an artist, everyone, we all look, we all learn to see, learn how to read a painting, learn how to watch a movie. So we rely on our understanding of visual language through looking. But I think this thing is very much a trained behavior. Like we learn to do it.
Yep.
We learn what's beauty, what's ugly. So there's a lot of connotation in the idea of sight.
Definitely.
And then, you know, we can also go into truth and illusions, delusions. So I guess, you know, there are many aspects that can be kind of used as a motif, right? Like eyes. And then there's also lens, right? We use lens to see things clearer. And then there's also the actual distortion of the object, melting or whatever. So there are many steps that we need to kind of decode before we understand what we're really looking at. And I think metaphorically, that's quite nice that all these things are different layers of interactions that we kind of have to think about before we can even talk about what the image is. I suspect as an artist, I actually make art about art. I don't think my art has any really real topic. It changes from time to time, but
I think about art
a lot.
Yeah.
So I tend up thinking about art. I think my art is kind of about art. But that can be very boring. I really don't like meta art. I don't particularly like art about other artists or like as a quotation. But but I do think about sight, and then the idea of how we see and how we can see better or worse. Because as an image maker, I think seeing is everything. So it's in a way a self self-analysis. I don't know.
I get you. Yeah. But I mean, through your work, you're trying to explore what you can do with art. Like, what is art even for you, right?
Yeah. I'm still figuring out what is art.
But you also talked about this two different forms of art making. One is, like, as you were saying, like, if you're a painter, you can just paint without really having to think about maybe like, what am I going to paint? Sometimes you just want to put colors together and you like that. And then there's the other kind of art making that I guess we associate more with conceptual and contemporary
intelligent
exactly, like research, or art is more like the medium to spread a message.
It's like the vehicle.
Yeah exactly. Or sometimes, you know, I guess a lot of this art is trying to spread a message, but if you don't read a description, you can't really tell what it's trying to say. So like, how do you...
I don't know. I had a conversation with a friend recently. He's a filmmaker, and he felt like the problem in film now is that people who get awards and get to competitions are people who can write very well.
Okay.
Not necessarily they are good filmmakers, but they write well.
Sorry, just to cut that a little bit. Like, are they... But they're usually different people, right? Or is the director also the one?
Oh, no, sorry.
That, like,
writing is not the screenplay, but people who can write about their project well.
Oh,
so they
see.
Can write really... they can write about their film very philosophically, very research-based or whatever.
I think
that's the same problem in visual arts as well. A lot of artists are not necessarily... I don't want to say bad artists, good artists, but I feel like...
Not as compelling to you.
No, I don't want... It's not about comparing, but I think there's an emphasis on, you know, certain type of art that can... That it's almost better as a story than the actual thing. And I'm terrible at writing, so I kind of like art looking at... I kind of just like having a painting and without... anything to explain the painting.
That's something I noticed too, which I'd like to differ. I don't think you're bad at writing, because I was reading your descriptions and I really wanted to say that it's not pretentious in a way that, like, you know, I'm trying to explore this thing and then you need to see this in my work in order to understand, but more like a lot of times you're describing something. You're describing the images in your mind that maybe, you know, like after reading the text, I see a bit more of what you were seeing in the images itself.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't want the work to be... I just feel like the art shouldn't... Some art don't need to be explained.
Yeah, definitely.
I think what the viewer can bring to it can make the work significant for themselves. I don't think I can I should add any words. So when I write, I try to be as plain as I can.
I think it's quite poetic.
Is
too.
It? Yeah. I'm not sure. The older I get, I seem to be less good at writing. But what was I saying? So I think my practice is very much about the visual language and sort of creating all this sort of motif and vocabulary for myself in a visual form. So I feel like the less need to kind of like overbear myself and think about in another language, which is words. Some people can do both. Like some artists can, you know, create a fantastic visual language and talk about it in writing. But I feel like right now I just want to kind of focus on expanding the visual language and continue building the motifs instead of kind of thinking about it in what does it mean in English. So I guess just like maybe my focus is not quite balanced, but you know, I enjoy painting, so I'm just kind of painting instead of and start thinking about English words.
I mean, I'm sure you think about issues in the world, but just not your output is not in the form of art.
And I don't know. I like to believe there are many type of artists, and there are people who are very good at research and turn that data into something visual.
Yeah.
I just don't research about anything. I mean,
you do, but I think just, it's
I think the research is also not a language based.
Yes.
Or historical based, or
Your research though, referring to the interview that you did with Object Lesson Space, you talked about this process of documenting, and I think that is a way of research as well, that you keep going back to the same things and thinking over the things. Yep. And you talk about how you like to sketch them because you have a bad memory, but also you want to figure out why you're obsessed with something.
Yeah.
So what's something that you have been obsessed with?
My new thing is, you know, when you walk, when you have those drain, sometimes the drain has a
big one or the small one.
Big, like, or small, but big ones. The big drains, longgang, is it?
Oh, like the canals in
Singapore. And then sometimes they have a round pipe that goes across it.
Oh, in the middle of the drain? Or?
Yeah, it goes across the drain. And then to prevent people from walking on the long pipes, they'll put up a fence. Have you seen those?
Oh, okay. I know what you're saying.
And then the fence is like in the shape of the pipe.
Yeah, it's like a fan.
Yeah, it's like a fan. Uh-huh. But it's like a fan out shape.
Yeah.
That's my new favorite thing in the world.
Oh.
Because visually is very pleasing. But also I like to think, It's not a rectangle, usually, like the fence, because it's fanned out because they don't want people to go around it.
Yeah.
And so it's in this fan shape.
Yeah.
So it's about kind of about like our inability to walk on the side of the pipe. But you know, if you have an animal, if you have an ant, you can crawl on the side of the pipe and go through it. So like a little design decision like that becomes an accidental aesthetic object.
Right.
So I've just been walking around and taking pictures of them. I don't know what to do with it yet, but I think it has something to do with like dimensions and different planes and 2D surfaces and 3D surfaces. And then another thing I've been thinking, kind of related to this, is the I've been looking at a lot of different projection maps. So, you know, like the globe is like this three, is a sphere, and then translating the sphere to a two-dimensional map is actually very inaccurate. All the maps we look at is actually not a good representation of the spherical surfaces.
Yep.
So this idea of like when figuring out projection for a 3D surface to a 2D surface is quite interesting to me. So it's, yeah, so I'm quite interested in this sort of dimensions and the things that are lost in translation.
And that's something that you're exploring right now visually as well.
Thinking about different objects existing different dimensions, but all live in the same area.
I'm also wondering, so when you have a motif and you or like this object that you're obsessed with, and you document and you sketch it, does the action of sketching kind of make you discover new things about it?
Yeah, I think so. But it doesn't happen just like once. It happens as a repeated action. Sometimes I don't know why I think about certain things or certain shapes so much, but the more I do it, I have a better chance of thinking, figuring out why it draws me. It's kind of, usually starts as a mystery, which is kind of nice.
Does it get solved? Do you have an example?
Solved. It's not really solved, but the more you draw a shape, I realize it becomes a character, and you start thinking about this character more and more, and you will start to have some kind of narrative, and you will end up in different sketches I do. So I like to think them as characters, and they have different qualities about them. So like the way I draw figures, like the trees, I think they're kind of a character. The water is a character for me. The different shape of the clouds, the sun, they all kind of have their own personality. And then it affects the way I draw them, I guess.
Do they end up a bit deviating from what they look like originally? Because, you know, I noticed that you don't really draw photorealistic versions of things.
Yeah, no.
Is there like
a certain... it's weird because I have to teach students how to draw from observation, but I don't. I really don't find it necessary for me to do it. But no, it's about learning to observe, and we can all observe very differently. We all have, we can sort of emphasize on different things. I like to close my eyes and draw that way. But it's about observational skill. It's just that the outcome might not be like a photograph. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I never really thought I need to draw what's in front of me.
That makes sense though. I think
maybe I just don't know how.
Yeah.
I think I can.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, you know, in terms of your visual language. Because I think you've developed quite a strong style that is recognizable. And
yeah, it's weird because for a long time I thought I don't want any visual like style. I don't like the word style.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
I don't know. It can be pigeonholed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have a style. Not that it's a real concern, but I used to admire artists that can go back and forth between different mediums and idea based, right? Like or concept based art where they can switch easily between using different mediums to support whatever idea they have. I used to be a big fan of that. But the more I painted, I think style just become inevitable.
it just forms itself.
Yeah, it just kind of forms itself. It's whether I like it or not doesn't really matter. Sometimes I think I have no control over anything.
Oh my goodness. Just happens.
I don't know. Do you feel that way sometimes?
Yeah, I actually have very similar sentiments in thinking about style. The thing is that I think of myself both in terms of drawing and also maybe in terms of the way I dress. I would think that I like to put myself in different characters almost.
Right.
But surprisingly sometimes my friends or peers would say that, oh, this is so you, or like this is your style. And I'm like, I didn't know that I had a thing that people associate me with.
Right.
And going back to what you said about how sometimes you almost can't really control it, just I really want to find out, you know, like with doing this podcast and talking to people as well, like whether there are just some parts of us, you know, that it's just like that, and like you might think that I don't want to draw this, but things end up in the kind of part of you.
Yeah. Like I said, maybe it's better it's a mystery. It's like, you know, being an artist, I hope that I can do this for a long time. And certain things you just need time to figure out. And that's kind of the beauty of it. If you take me 40 years to figure out how to paint, well, I might have to spend 40 years. It's a old romantic idea about art, but doesn't seem very practical at all. But yeah, so I like that it's a mystery, and I like that, you know, I think every artist have some kind of formula. The more you work, different artists have a better ways of thinking about how to make art, and some people figure out a formula, right? And I don't think I have yet, even though, you know, I've been doing art for quite a long time. And when it comes to formula, I think it's something that will continue to change. And, you know, I don't know. I didn't think I would start painting, but I started 3 years ago, and I've been doing it more and more. So yeah, the formula continues to change, and I don't know why it changes. I don't think I'm telling myself to change it. I'm not sure.
And you've had these different phases of art.
Yeah.
Yeah. There certain styles, for instance, that you tried that you feel like this is really not me, or, you know, different mediums?
As a young artist, as a student, you really try a lot of different things. I did performance art. I made videos. I used to make sculptures. I still make sculptures, but yeah. So things kind of come and go. Just right now, because so much of my my thinking is about sight and color. I guess painting was the medium that I feel is has the most potential for me to think through. And then it's very immediate, which I like. So maybe when I figure out how to use color, maybe I'll just move on. But color is very exciting, and I feel like there are many more things I want to do with it.
What are you experimenting with color right now?
I don't know. But it's hard to say. I guess I read this book called Chromophobia.
Oh.
You can check it out. Have you read it?
No.
It's really good.
Mean
Fear of Colors.
Yeah.
Fear of Colors. Yeah. Okay. It's written by an artist. It's a very short book. You can check it out. Basically, kind of trace the history of why in the West a lot of master painters always paint black and white first to figure out the tones. But that's not a practice that's done outside the West, historically speaking.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Because a lot of artists don't want to deal with colors.
I kind of get that though.
Yeah, it's much harder to see tones when you have too many colors. So they always do the underpainting in, say, brown, or use a blue color to do the underpainting. Yeah.
So you don't mean that to do a pencil or like a black and white medium first? Like you mean
they can do use pencil, yeah. But some painters directly use oil paint to do underpainting using one tone, like just blue.
And then they paint over it.
Or paint over it, yeah.
Is the blue just like a guideline or actually?
It's kind of like a guideline for them. Because it's much harder to think about tones or value in colors.
Yeah.
But anyway, the book kind of traces why different cultures and different histories have this sort of fear of colors. And yeah, so after reading that book, I was quite inspired. It's like, yeah, I want to think about colors. So I think before that, I approach color in a very sort of, I want to say kind of like basic or conceptual level. It's like, if the thing is yellow, then it just be yellow.
Very functional way.
It's very functional. If I don't want color, then it should be white. If I use a concrete block, actually it's okay. Just a gray concrete, it's fine. I don't need to make any color out of it.
There's the additional layer of decision making,
yes,
right?
It's painful.
Because I think with that decision also comes a lot of other interpretations.
Yes,
you know,
so people attach meaning
to
colors. People attach different feelings, and people look at the art very differently by the color you choose. So it's an additional thing that some artists might not want to think about. A lot of conceptual artists don't like to think about colors. Because it can be kind of arbitrary as well. And then there's also the designer approach to colors, right? Like it's very, very scientific. You have color patch swatches. You have complementary color sets, blah, blah, blah. To me, that seems almost too scientific. So I guess when I started painting, I wanted to be more sort of, I just kind of want to use my eyes as the guideline. If it feels right, then I'll use the colors. So right now my painting has a lot of colors. It's a little bit messy. But I find it quite exciting. I like colors that are in conflict with each other. I like colors that are not supposed to be in the same place. So this idea of like chaos and order is quite exciting to me. Yeah.
But does that mean that you prefer more saturated colors as well? Because it's
I was. I think about a year ago, my color sets are a lot more saturated. But now I'm trying to use a little bit more water in my pigment. Something a little bit easier on the eyes.
So I noticed that even in your watercolor or paintings, there's also a lot of texture, which is, I find, quite a signature of your work.
Yeah. And some people just describe it as not finished.
Oh, because it's not smooth out?
Yeah.
See, that also goes back to what I wanted to discuss with like conventions of, you know, whether it's seeing or like what's good or what's beautiful. Do your art does have a bit of, especially the sketches, like this very sketchy and I guess kind of not finished quality. Is that something that you enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I think they're finished.
Mm-hmm.
All the spaces filled out.
Yeah.
No, but I don't know.
Why do you think people, you know, like comment that or?
Oh yeah, I don't know. I guess we have certain expectation of what a finished work should look like.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird judgment. But sometimes I also ask myself whether something's finished or not. It's hard to tell. Especially using so many colors, it can kind of go haywire if I work on it too much.
Mm.
So sometimes I stop. Sometimes I take a moment to think about it before I continue. I think I like it quite raw.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think sketches is okay.
I'm trying to find this piece. Mm. I have no idea where it's from. But
what's it called? Or what does it look
okay,
like?
Okay, so it looks like it's a classroom setting, and I think it has like pink floor and green desk and a bunch of birds.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one. That one's under the second one, I think, from Ongoing.
Double Dream Hotel.
Double Dream Hotel, yeah.
Okay.
What do you think about that one?
Yeah. Why I'm remembering that is because I was thinking about the way you apply texture to your works. And I think in that piece, and a lot of your other pieces, like, you know how in manga and stuff like that, like, there's a lot of cross-hatching a lot of mark making.
Right.
But the way that you apply the lines, they're not like in a very linear way.
No. And I don't know how to draw.
I feel like, but the haphazardness, it's like, you know, whether you like it or not, I guess a trademark of yours almost.
Yeah, we're just bad at drawing. I thought I'd try a color pencil, but yeah, I think it's
like it's fine.
It's really bad, but yeah.
So I kind of like that kindergarten drawing. Though.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so I'm kind of a big fan of outside the art.
Okay.
I think they have a certain quality that trained artists don't have. I'm not sure exactly how to explain it, but I think a lot of outside the art that I look at have certain rawness to it. I think it's about convention, you know, like, because it's a trained thing, it's not a natural thing. So when they don't go through art school, I think they see and draw very differently, and I think that's, you know, I think some of them have, you know, certain energy to it because they're not being so bogged down by thousands of years of drawing or painting conventions.
Mm.
So I'm pretty drawn to that. And so when I sketch and when I paint, I try to remind myself not to be too bogged down by all this techniques and things that people expect you to do a certain way. For example, I think watercolor painting especially, I would say 99% of watercolor paintings are pretty bad because they all kind of look the same. Like they follow a certain technique.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about. Like there's a certain school of watercolor paintings that are technically very good, but very also very boring to look at.
Yeah.
So I guess when I went to painting, I was very averse to paint that way. So I just...
Is that why you chose watercolor as well? Because there's like such a strong, you know, convention of how it's supposed to look like.
Yeah. That also, I think actually like traditional watercolor. I found the watermark very...
Okay.
It's actually very sensual.
Mm.
And it's very soft and it's very... It's very beautiful watercolor pigment, and I find paper surface much more exciting than a canvas because canvas seems very tough compared to paper.
Mm.
Paper can stand it with a little bit of water and it leaves a mark on it. I don't think I was very conscious thinking about like not painting a certain way. I just wanted to paint without like need to paint that way, I guess.
Mm.
So I just trying to figure out my own way of painting.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I don't know.
good
and bad. Uh-huh. Good and bad experiments, yeah. Yeah.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about how, you know, in your biography on your website, mm-hmm. you talk about how you wanna in one of the projects, Blue Trees, Black Fruits,
mm-hmm.
and this whole series of documentations, mm-hmm. and you talk about how you want to view the world nakedly mm-hmm. and unfiltered and undistorted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why did you think this way of like such words, and mm-hmm. what does it mean for you?
So I think about the word naked at that time. Because like I said, there are many layers to the way we see things, or there are many conventions that we see things. Hypothetical, I was thinking whether we can look without those mm-hmm. things in front of us. It's kind of like, I guess metaphorically, like staring to the sun. You can't do it. You'll be blind. You won't see anything. You just see light particles. So we can't stare at the sun, but we can look around the world and know the sun exists.
Mm.
So we had to look, you know, on the ground or around us. So it's kind of nice, like thinking about staring in the sun without any protection as a way to see the sun nakedly or see the light nakedly. That was just sort of, I guess, a starting point for me to think about light, to think about what are we looking at actually, as an image maker, what am I describing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because before reading this, I would think that your depictions of objects or things are distorted in a way. You know, like how can you look at something undistorted or unfiltered?
Right. Yeah, I don't know what that means also. I think everybody might have different take on the word naked.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess we are so used to thinking in those conventions, we kind of forget what the thing might be or the possibility of it, what it might appear to us. Mm. Just talking about art is just so coded in language, you know, like it's this art speak. It's
know,
it's changing
right?
the way we see things, right?
Mm, yeah.
Go to museums. Are we really looking at art, or are we looking at techniques? Are we looking at just how the artists approach this imagery? You know, there are so many other things we're looking at. But
so what kind of art entices you? Like, what do you enjoy looking at, or not just say enjoy, but you know, you feel you can engage with?
Well, there are many things, obviously. But recently, I've been looking at more paintings and drawings. So I like to look at, you know, painting and drawings that have, to me, interesting compositions and interesting use of textures and colors and those things.
Like the formal qualities.
Yeah, the formal qualities. Yeah, I think I care less about sort of the subject matter. I like to see how artists sort of figure out how to put things together in a overall composition, and how they approach figures, how they approach landscape. I'm a formalist.
is there such a word? Yeah,
formalist. Okay. Yeah.
But you still read the description?
Do I read description of the artwork that I look at? Not really.
Okay. So if the artwork itself is
good, then I like it. Then I don't read. Yeah, I'm bad at researching. I don't read about them. I guess recently I've been looking at a lot of Edward Munch's paintings. Mm. He's a really good painter, and unfortunately, everybody really liked The Screamer, which I think is his worst painting. It's too famous. It kind of, there are too many strange significance people attach to that painting. It's not a particularly good painting, I don't think. But his other paintings are really, really good. They have a sense of melancholy, sense of depression.
Yeah.
I think he was going through a lot. So I really want to read about artists, but I think I might actually pick up a book about him. what he went through in his life and how he approached art and things like that. I admire his, the way he draw figures, how he use colors, how everything connects together in a canvas.
Definitely.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I like Gauguin as well. I think a lot of the post-impressionist artists, I guess, it's quite emotional. And they managed to do that in a very visual and formal manner. That's not just through the expressions of subjects or, you know, like not something so literal.
Yeah, it's not literal.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Sometimes I like Monk's painting because in some way they're very simple. Sometimes we take simplicity for granted and we tend to complicate things sometimes. So I'm for simple paintings.
Simple paintings. Cool. Yeah. Well, finally, let's talk a little bit about humor, which is the
I like simple paintings. I don't want to talk about humor.
Difficult things to talk about, for sure.
Yeah.
Actually, off air, we were almost kind of about to have this discussion about, you know, humor. And you mentioned that you think humor could be just what's fashionable, right? Or something.
I don't know. I have no idea. It's not something I actually think about it that much. I don't know. Is it? I think I have a sense of humor. But not everybody use that in the way they make work, right? It doesn't always end up in the art they make.
Yeah.
But I do, but I don't really know why. I don't know. I guess in a very simple way, maybe I'm just trying to be who I am and and I don't really think about it beyond that and just kind of end up there.
You want to be a bit more lighthearted?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think humor necessarily means lighthearted. I think sometimes humor can point out very serious things. It's just one emotion we all have.
And, but it kind of makes things more easy to accept, right? Let's say if you're talking about something serious or tragic.
Yeah, it's a strategy to accept, to talk about tragic things. But I don't know whether it's
morbid.
It's just in general, it's a very strange thing where, for example, I don't think it's very rarely for a comedy movie to win, say, Oscar Best Movies. It's always particular type of movie that wins Best Pictures. Or screenplays.
I see.
The seriousness is linked to high art.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where comedy, not always. So I think that's an interesting thing. Even though I think they're all linked together. To be funny is to be sad, and to be sad is to be funny. So yeah, I don't really know the answer. But I think doing art sometimes it's about an attitude more than anything else. So your attitude towards life, towards society, towards authority figures, towards tradition, history. Yeah, it's about having attitude. And once in a while I have an attitude.
That's a great way to end this. Have an attitude.
Yeah. So sometimes being funny is the most natural attitude I have toward strange world that we live in.
I like that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Yijing.
To end today's session, I'll be playing a song that Mike has selected by the band Destroyer, and the name of the song is called In Dreams. Enjoy!
With the one who